Okay, let's just jump right in. Zip Miller wears Nikes with his suit because he discovered a glitch in the stairwell.
That one sentence right there is the whole story, isn't it?
It really is.
Yep.
It's the perfect image. You've got this, tailored, expensive suit, the uniform of the corporate world, and then running shoes.
High-performance running shoes, no less. And it's all happening inside this completely bland, beige, Class B office building, the kind of place where nothing interesting is ever supposed to happen.
Exactly. And that's our mission for today's deep dive. We are going deep into the case of Zip Miller and what the archives call the stairwell glitch.
This is a story from the Office Horror Collection, and it's not about ghosts in the server room. It's about what happens when that corporate obsession with efficiency, with saving every second, actually,
Oh.
well, it breaks time itself.
And it breaks it in such a mundane place.
Right, between floors 4 and 5.
So to be clear, for everyone listening, we're not talking about a guy who's just really good at his job. This isn't about being proactive.
No,
Yeah.
not at all. The sources are very clear on this. This is genuine temporal preemption. Zip found a way to literally clip through reality into yesterday. He wasn't saving time, he was recapturing it.
He was running on tomorrow's knowledge tech.
Very sleek.
And for you, the listener, this is really a look at the ultimate efficiency hack. What if you could actually rewind the clock on a bad day at work? But it's also about the cost.
The existential toll. We're going to be looking at what happens when absolute mastery over the clock just completely shatters the person who's trying to wield it.
I keep getting stuck on the logistics of it. How do you find a time machine in a stairwell?
And my focus is going to be on the other side of that, the
Yeah.
psychological breakdown, the physical cost of perceiving time faster than reality can handle. It's a deeply unsettling story.
Okay, so let's get into the mechanics. Act one, the glitch. How did this actually work?
Well, the geography of it is key. The sources are so specific. It's always the stairwell between floors 4 and 5.
Just that one section.
Just that one. And there's some speculation as to why. It seems to be this weird intersection point in the building's architecture.
Like what?
There's a theory that the main HVAC shaft and a major utility conduit run parallel to the central support column right there. And the resonance, the sort of low-level hum between them, creates a tiny distortion. A ripple.
A ripple that's normally too small to notice.
Exactly. It's a flaw in the system, but you need a catalyst. You need to introduce a specific kind of energy to exploit it.
And that energy is zip, sprinting.
Yes, purely human speed. That's what's so wild. No machine, no high-tech gadget. He has to sprint at a very specific speed, a very specific angle. He had to have practiced
He
this.
basically had to find the resonant frequency of the timeline with his own body.
That's a perfect way to put it. It's like shattering a glass with a specific note, only he's shattering the barrier between Tuesday and Monday.
And if he got it wrong, if he was too slow or the angle was off.
The sources suggest it was incredibly dangerous. He wouldn't just trip. He could experience severe disorientation. Or worse, a kind of physical shearing, like running full speed into a wall that wasn't there a second ago.
Wow. Okay, so the Nikes weren't a style choice. They were safety equipment.
They were an operational necessity. And the result, when he got it right, wasn't just going down one floor. The phrase used is he falls sideways into time and lands in yesterday.
I love that language. Clips through reality. It sounds like a video game bug.
It is a video game bug. He found a boundary error in the physics of his environment. The building's reality was designed for people walking, maybe hurrying a bit. It wasn't designed for an employee moving at that velocity.
We overloaded the
You
system.
overloaded the buffer, yeah. And the system's default error state wasn't a crash, it was a temporal redirect. It routed him to the previous save point, which was yesterday.
And you have to assume that initial experimentation was just terrifying.
Oh, absolutely. But you can also see how quickly he would have understood the advantage, the leverage it gave him.
Infinite do-overs.
Infinite do-overs. If he messes up a presentation on Tuesday, he just sprints, lands on Monday morning, and does it all over again perfectly.
And that's how he gets away with it,
Yeah.
how he funds it.
How do you mean?
Well, he'd need time to practice, right? He'd need energy drinks, good shoes. The sources mention he was using these early jumps to fix huge financial errors for the company, mistakes that would have cost millions.
Ah, right. So he fixes the problem before anyone even knows it's a problem. From the company's perspective, he's not a time traveler, he's a profit center. He's generating so much saved capital that nobody questions his methods.
He became a legend. the most efficient employee in company history.
And you see these incredible anecdotes. The key example from the sources is that he would deliver a completed report to someone's desk
5 minutes before you even realize you needed to write it.
I mean, can you imagine that? The sheer impossibility of it.
It's the ultimate preemption. And that's the distinction we have to make here, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't just being proactive.
No, it's a critical difference. A proactive employee anticipates a possible need. They might draft an email they think they'll need later.
Right.
Zip operated on perfect knowledge. He knew a need was coming, and he knew the exact solution required because for him, it had already happened.
He wasn't meeting deadlines. He was making them irrelevant. He did the work before the decision to do the work was even made.
He's the perfect employee, the ultimate corporate asset. He eliminates risk because he operates from outside of linear causality. How can anyone compete with that?
You can't. And for a while, the company didn't even question it. They reaped the rewards. They saw the flawless results, the soaring profits, and just accepted it.
Which is in itself a kind of corporate horror story, the willingness to accept a miracle as long as it improves the bottom line.
But that acceptance didn't last. Which brings us to Act Two, the perfect, terrifying employee.
The cost of knowing.
Yeah, because the sources detail this really creepy shift in the office. It says his coworkers loved him, then they feared him.
And that fear wasn't about professional jealousy. It wasn't that he was better at his job. It was something much more fundamental.
A violation of, what would you call it? Personal temporal privacy.
That's a great term for it. It's the feeling of being completely transparent, the feeling that your own thoughts aren't private.
And the anecdote that just sums it all up is so simple and so chilling. It's unnerving when someone hands you a tissue before you even sneeze.
Exactly. That's the moment. That's when you realize this person isn't just smart or intuitive. They're seeing a version of reality that you haven't gotten to yet.
He's watching a replay of a game you're still playing for the first time.
Yes. And your colleagues, your free will, your spontaneous decisions, they all just become data points to him. Things he already knows are going to happen. It completely undermines your sense of agency.
You'd start to wonder if you're even making your own choices anymore.
People started to actively avoid him. The sources talk about how they'd communicate only in formal emails, trying to create a paper trail he couldn't get ahead of. They'd change the routines, take a different route to the coffee machine just to see if they could do something he hadn't anticipated.
But he always did.
He always did. And that just made the fear worse. He became this ghost of perfect efficiency, a pariah.
And all this temporal meddling, it wasn't just affecting his colleagues. It was having a profound effect on Zip himself.
Oh, a catastrophic effect. He was using the glitch so often, accumulating so many extra days, that he literally got out of sync with the building's timeline.
The human body isn't meant to run at, what, 1.5 times the speed of normal life?
Or 2 times. The strain would be immense. The sources describe him as moving in a blur, constantly vibrating with caffeine energy. This isn't just being tired from overtime. His entire biology, his neurology, is trying to keep up with a velocity that reality can't sustain.
You're living at a higher frame rate.
Yes. And from his perspective, the rest of the world ground to a halt. The quote is that everyone else was standing like mannequins.
That is true isolation.
Yeah.
To be moving so fast that everyone you know seems frozen.
Imagine the frustration, the sheer mental effort of slowing yourself down enough to have a conversation that, for you, is happening in agonizing slow motion. He was completely alienated from shared human experience.
And that's what leads him to the next part, the anchor. The thing that proves his mastery is incomplete.
The symbol of his failure, the envelope.
A single crisp envelope he cannot deliver.
Addressed to Dean Calendar Payroll. And it's stamped over and over in this angry red ink.
Error. User does not exist.
And the context for that error is the core of the systemic horror here. Dean deleted himself from the timeline last week.
What does that even mean, deleted himself from the timeline?
It implies another kind of temporal glitch in the system. If Zip's glitch was about gaining time and redoing things, Dean's was about erasure, removing himself and maybe his debts or his mistakes from the official record. A successful correction, the sources call it.
So the system could erase the person, the user, but it couldn't erase the paperwork associated with him.
Precisely. The envelope is the metadata ghost. It's the physical proof of a timeline correction that the bureaucracy payroll, or reality if you want to get metaphorical, can't fully process. The user doesn't exist, so the package has no destination. It's an undeliverable piece of the past.
And why is it a physical envelope? Zip deals in digital information, reports, emails. Why does a piece of paper have this much power over him?
Because paper is physical. It's an immutable object in a way that digital data isn't. You can't just delete it across timelines. It has to be physically moved from point A to point B. It's an anchor to linear reality.
So this envelope becomes this weight.
It's an accumulation of lost time that he is forced to carry. The one task that the master of efficiency cannot complete.
And it connects to other stories from this archive, doesn't it? This idea of data that can't be reconciled.
Yes, exactly. If you've been following our other deep dives, this will sound familiar. It reminds me of the real Wendy case, where a person's digital file freezes while their life keeps moving. Or Klaus Richter, the soldier who was erased, but the maintenance logs for his vehicle proved he existed. Erasure becomes the evidence.
So Dean is gone, but the task related to him, this envelope, becomes an orphaned piece of data.
An orphaned task. And who does it attach itself to? The one employee who supposedly has mastery over time. The system burdens Zip with its own failure. It's a permanent reminder that his control is an illusion.
He has to carry the ghost of the one colleague who actually managed to escape the system. And that failure, that constant physical reminder, is what pushes him over the edge.
It has to be. He can't solve the unsolvable problem, so he decides to just outrun it entirely. Which brings us to Act 3, The Loop.
The ultimate bottleneck.
He's alienated, he's carrying the symbol of his own failure, and his only solution is more speed, more efficiency.
His motivation isn't just about fixing small things anymore. He wants a massive head start on the fiscal quarter. He's not trying to get ahead by a day, he's trying to get ahead by months.
It's an addiction. The control, the power of knowing what's next, that's the only reality he can stand anymore, so he pushes the glitch harder than ever before. He's not just trying to optimize the timeline, he's trying to escape it.
And the physics of the stairwell, they finally break. The source says he ran so fast he lapped himself.
I mean, just pause on that phrase, lapped himself. He accelerated his temporal jump so much that he didn't just arrive in yesterday. He arrived at a point in the stairwell before the version of himself who had just started running.
He caught up to his own path.
And collided with it. The description is brutally simple. He turned the corner between floors 4 and 5 and crashed into his own back.
Which is physically impossible.
It's a paradox, a temporal singularity. Two instances of the same object trying to occupy the same space-time coordinates, and the system has a fatal error.
It's like a computer trying to save two versions of the same file to the same location at the same nanosecond. The whole thing just freezes.
That's a perfect analogy. Reality couldn't resolve the paradox. So the two versions of Zip didn't just collide. They merged into a continuous error state.
He got stuck in a physical loop on the stairs, tripping over himself forever, falling and rising in the same motion.
It's horrifying. He's a monument to perpetual, useless motion. He wanted ultimate efficiency, and his reward was an infinite loop of zero progress. He's forever sprinting, forever falling, and forever getting nowhere.
He became the thing he hated most.
A bottleneck.
The ultimate bottleneck.
Yeah.
Created by the man who lived to eliminate them.
And the final dark joke of this whole story is how this cosmic tragedy appears to everyone else in the office.
Yes. They don't see a man trapped in a time loop. They don't understand the physics. All they know is that the stairwell between 4 and 5 is weird now. It's a permanent bottleneck. The sources say all they perceive are shadows blur and footsteps never quite line up.
It's just an unsettling, inexplicable obstruction. An annoyance. They just take the elevator now. The source of ultimate speed is now the cause of a permanent, minor delay for everyone else.
The irony is just. It's crushing. His entire identity was built on removing obstacles, and his final form is a human obstacle, forever blocking the path.
He tried to break the sequence of reality, and reality's response was to trap him in an eternal, pointless sequence of his own making. The system has speed limits, and he flew right past them.
So if we pull this all together, Zip's arc is complete. He goes from this hyper-efficient hero
to a feared pariah, a glitch in the social fabric of the office.
And finally, to a trapped temporal error, a permanent piece of broken code in the building's operating system.
Yeah, the one-line takeaway for this whole deep dive really says it all. When your entire identity is built on saving time, at some point, time tries to collect.
And it collected big time.
Yeah.
It took everything. His reward for saving all that time was to be trapped in a single repeating moment for eternity.
It's the absolute opposite of efficiency, a task with no endpoint.
I want to go back just for a second to that envelope, the one for Dean Callender. Because that feels like the key to all of this. It was the one debt he couldn't clear.
And I think the final thought for our listener is tied up in that. The system itself, payroll, reality, whatever you want to call it. It couldn't process Dean's erasure. It created an error. And that error, that debt, it has to go somewhere.
It doesn't just disappear.
It doesn't. It transfers, and it transferred to Zip, the person most capable of manipulating time. It became his burden to carry.
So the idea is that temporal debt, operational debt, it's conserved. You can delete the user, but the task remains, and it finds a new host.
It's a mandatory burden. The envelope wasn't just Zip's problem. It was proof that the system will always try to reconcile its own errors, even if it has to attach them to someone else.
Which leaves us with a really provocative question for you, the listener. When the system fails to account for deleted time, when someone successfully erases themselves from the record, does that lost data, that unresolved task, become a mandatory burden for the rest of us?
What undeliverable envelope are you carrying around in your own life? What piece of someone else's erased history has become your responsibility to manage?
A pretty heavy thought to end on. A perfect place to wrap this deep dive into corporate horror and the price of preemption.
If you want to explore this further, you can find a full breakdown and more of these office horror stories from inside the system. There are cases like Real Wendy or Monopoly that explore these themes of systemic failure from different angles.
The entire archive and all the source material are available. Just look for the handle at Inspector Story. Thank you for joining us.
Until next time, maybe take the elevator, just in case.